Is breastfeeding really safe when a patient has hepatitis C? The answer? Yeah, it is. But confusion persists even today, mainly surrounding the whole issue of viral load. That's the topic and focus of a new publication that came out March 2024 in the Green Journal, that's Obstetrics and Gynecology. We're going to highlight this in this episode. Yep, we've learned a lot about hepatitis C and HIV and breastfeeding. In this episode, we're going to review the different hepatitis C genotypes and why they matter for clinical practice. We're also going to review current breastfeeding guidelines for women with hepatitis C and the updated guidelines for breastfeeding with HIV. We all learned that HIV was a straight stop, no go, you cannot breastfeed. But as of 2023, just last year, that actually changed. So we're going to talk about that in this episode. We're also going to talk about how some patients can spontaneously be cured of hepatitis C at the end of pregnancy. It's not for everybody, but some people it does happen, and we're going to discuss that in this episode. And lastly, we're going to discuss why viral load does matter for one of these conditions, but not the other regarding breastfeeding. We've got lots to cover here, guys. So let's get into hepatitis C and breastfeeding confusion and the updated HIV guidance right now. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
As a quick reminder, in ACOG's Clinical Practice Guidance number 6, we get the contrast between hepatitis B and hepatitis C. So here's your quick refresher. Remember that hepatitis B virus is a DNA virus. Hepatitis B, DNA virus. But hepatitis C virus is a RNA virus. So that's the first thing that's different. Also, hepatitis C virus, remember, is the most commonly reported blood-borne infection in the U.S. Its main mode of transmission, of course, is parenteral drug use, but you can also get it through sexual intimacy, although that's much more rare. So yes, you can get it through anal sex. You can get it from unprotected vaginal penile sex, but that is much, much lower than intravenous drug use. And if it's going to be through sex, it's typically through anal sex, through the back door, not unprotected vaginal penile intercourse. That's according to the college. Everyone, of course, I don't have to tell you that syphilis is the bane of our existence. Oh, it's increasing and it's pissed. We'll get that. We've covered that many, many times. But hepatitis C cannot be forgotten because that joker is also on the rise also. This is why on August the 17th, 2023, just last fall, ACOG released a call to action for, quote, routine hepatitis C screening in pregnancy, end quote. And it's just a reminder, this is something that ACOG has always been putting out. It's like, don't forget about, yes, you check for hepatitis B. Everybody does that, or at least once you should do a triple test, HIV testing, syphilis. But don't forget hepatitis C, because the ideal time to identify this is when the patient is not pregnant. Because if they do have it, then the next step is to figure out their genotype, which we're going to discuss next, to get them treated so they don't go into pregnancy with active hepatitis C, because as of right now, direct-acting antivirals have not been cleared for use in pregnancy or lactation. So if you find hepatitis C in pregnancy, that's good. We need to identify that. That should not impact our mode of delivery. So we shouldn't section for them. And I know that makes people uncomfortable, but it's right here. Quote, use of pre-labor cesarean delivery has not been found to be associated with a reduction in vertical transmission, even in the setting of maternal viremia, and is therefore not recommended for the purpose of decreasing transmission risk. That's according to clinical practice guidance number 6. ACOG also reminds us that, quote, although there are some reports of increased risk of perinatal transmission when the neonate comes in contact with infected vaginal blood and secretions during delivery, quote, there is insufficient evidence to suggest that invasive obstetrical procedures be routinely avoided, including internal monitoring, episiotomy, or operative vaginal delivery when indicated, end quote. So, just as a quick reminder, and again, that's not the focus of this, but it's more of the identification issue. So the question people ask is, well, if you're not going to treat it, why do you check? Well, of course, the answer is because you need to know. At least you identified it. It's really more of an identification issue rather than a management issue. And then once they're done with breastfeeding, then you can start direct acting antivirals. Because as of right now, even though there is some data that seems to be okay for use in pregnancy, we're not there yet. So as of right now, ACOG and SMFM says delay direct acting antivirals, DAAs, until after pregnancy and after breastfeeding. But again, ACOG did have this August 17th, 2023, this call to action because it hepatitis C virus is increasing specifically in the individuals aged 20 to 39 years who have, quote, the highest incidence of acute hepatitis C infection, end quote. That's directly from the college, all right? So that actually increased by 15% just from 2019 to 2020. Wow. So this normally is like, oh, over 5 years. No, from 2019 to 2020, incidence rates of acute hepatitis C increased by 15% among individuals aged 20 to 39 years of age. Crazy. Before we leave this issue of identification of hepatitis C and treatment, remember, ideally, it's done before pregnancy. But there's one catch here, okay? And that's that if the treatment before pregnancy, so when the patient's not pregnant, included ribavirin, that medication needs to be taken and stopped at least 6 months before attempting to conceive, because there are concerns about that being a pathogen, a pharmaceutical pathogen to the developing embryo. So when ribavirin is given with direct acting antivirals to either the woman or their male partners, quote, couples should wait 6 months after completion of therapy to become pregnant due to the reported teratogenic effects of ribavirin. Okay, so you got to know what they're taking. So it's not like, hey, I just completed therapy and I'm ready to go now. If it included specifically ribavirin, usually with a directing acting antiviral, they need to wait 6 months from last dose in order to try to get pregnant. And that is for both partners, women and their male partners. Remember that whenever we're talking about a contagious viral condition, there's effects both ways, right? Does the pregnancy affect the condition, and does the condition affect the pregnancy? So let's first talk about the condition and whether it affects the pregnancy. The answer is yes. Maternal hepatitis C infection has been associated with an increased odds ratio of preterm labor, fetal distress, and poor fetal growth. According to ACOG, quote, approximately 0.4% of live births are delivered by pregnant individuals with hepatitis C infection, and 6% of infants born to women with hepatitis C will become infected. All right, so about 0.4% of live births are delivered by those who are hepatitis C positive, and of those, 6% of those infants will become infected. That was how the condition affects the pregnancy, but does pregnancy affect the condition? Well, pregnancy itself does not appear to negatively affect chronic hepatitis C viral infection. Now, in general, serum liver enzymes decrease during the first and third trimesters and then increase after delivery. Okay, so those are LFTs. However, the HCV, the hepatitis C viral load, tends to rise during the first and third trimesters and reach a peak during the third trimester and then decrease postpartum, all right? So we're talking about the what the virus does in pregnancy. We have to talk about two things, the liver enzymes and then the rise or fall of the RNA itself, the viral load. So those are different issues, okay? The reason that you have these changes is likely because of the immunosuppressive effect of pregnancy and the increased maternal plasma volume. That's why you see the reflection of those changes on the lab values. And here's a big clinical pearl. Remember that hepatitis C infected patients have an increased risk of intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy. So if they start complaining of itchy palms and soles of their feet or this widespread body pruritus, then it's something to keep in mind. And the reverse is true. There is a correlation between ICP and then the later identification of hepatitis C. So that's a big clinical pearl, guys. Remember, intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy, ICP, and HCV, hepatitis C virus, those kind of run together. So intrahepatic cholestasis and hepatitis C, do your due diligence there.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
One of the cool things about being in academic medicine is I get so fired up when I see somebody's name in print that I've got a connection to or have mentored me, or I just follow in terms of kind of the academic groupy nerdy community, which I belong to. And this is one of these articles. I mean, we've got Baha Sibai in this publication from March 2024. Of course, Alan Tito, we've talked about. We've got ties here, of course, to Texas, like George Saad and Brian Casey. Dr. Casey was a fellow when I was a resident. And I mean, he was amazing back then. And he yelled at me several times, I must say, during residency, because I likely deserved it. But a lot of Texas connections in this new publication from the Green Journal, the title of which is Breastfeeding Initiation, Duration, and Associated Factors Among People with Hepatitis C Viral Infection. So breastfeeding and hepatitis C, that's it pretty much in the synopsis of the title. No, this isn't just a Texas publication. I mean, wow, there's a lot of authors on this and a lot of great institutions, fantastic ones, UTMB, UT Houston. There is Stanford University, Boston Medical Center, University of Pittsburgh, Brown University, Cleveland, Ohio, Case Western. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's George Washington University. It's pretty darn impressive who wrote this. This was all done through the Eunice Kennedy Shriver NIH program. And it's a lot of just incredible authors on this. Again, the title, Breastfeeding Initiation, Duration, and Associated Factors Among People with Hepatitis C Viral Infection. Now, before we get into this, there's so much to talk about. I mean, a lot has happened with hepatitis C info, specifically regarding breastfeeding. We're going to review two weird stuff that you're going to be like, wow, the body's actually pretty friggin' amazing. One is what breast milk does to hepatitis C, because it actually inactivates it. What? Yes, it's true. And I'm going to show you how that works. It's species specific, but it's wild. Okay, so this is going to be the explanation of why, as I get ahead of myself, why viral load does not matter with hepatitis C virus in terms of breastfeeding. It matters overall for the patient's health, but it doesn't matter for breastfeeding, okay? But viral load does matter for HIV and breastfeeding. Now, let's stop there for a minute because I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we've already kind of laid the outline here that in the past, like before 2023, HIV was no go in a high resource country. Okay, I want to clarify that. If you're in a resource poor area, and especially in areas that are very famine or food restrictive, true desert environments, so like, man, you got to breastfeed. I mean, dehydration is going to kill the child more than HIV. And so WHO said, look, and if you've got to feed the child, and we'll worry about HIV later. That is a stance for research poor areas, okay? But resource poor areas, resource rich areas like the US, UK, Canada, historically it was no go on breastfeeding, period. It was HIV, no go, even though we weren't really sure if viral load mattered in the breast milk. We knew that high viral load obviously is an issue for transmission, but that's from person to person, not really horizontal transmission like with breastfeeding, okay? So historically, HIV was no-go regardless of viral load. But we've come to learn a lot of info since that historic statement, and we're going to talk about that in this minute. Now, the college has put together a lot of hepatitis C guidance in the last couple of years, and we're going to review this in a minute. Now, if you all remember, we touched on viral hepatitis in pregnancy in the fall of 2023 when ACOG released Clinical Practice Guidance Number 6. But in that episode, we really focused on the triple test for hepatitis B, all right? And we talked a little bit about hepatitis C, but not into the depth that we're going to talk about here, with a specific emphasis on breastfeeding, all right? So if you think, well, wait a minute, didn't we do this already? Well, kind of, peripherally, on hepatitis B as a main focus back in the fall of 2023. But I want this to be two main things. Predominant is the highlight of this new March 2024 publication, which has to do with hepatitis C. But I've got to sneak in a little bit about HIV in here because they are contrasting to each other, all right? Now, just to be clear, this new publication has nothing to do with HIV. Zilch, zippo, nada. But it's a good contrast because this is where this confusion comes about regarding viral load and breastfeeding. And the reason viral load matters is because when we review this new publication from the Green Journal, we're going to find that in patients who had high hepatitis C viral load, they had lower initiation and lower duration of breastfeeding. And it seems to be that some of that may have been clinician encouraged, like, oh, you got a high viral load, let's try not to breastfeed. Okay. And that's wrong. And I'm going to give you some of these stats here in a minute because it's pretty eye-opening, where practicing licensed professionals, meaning well, and this is a great example of how a great intention, remember, terrible implementation, kind of affects this thing here, because the percentage of respondents who said that hepatitis C was a straight contraindication for breastfeeding was over 20%. And I'm going to give you that here in just a minute, okay? So there's still a lot of confusion about hepatitis C, and they've taken a little bit of info from the HIV world and mushed it all together. And it's a shame because there is nothing like breastfeeding if the patient wants to, okay? I'm totally against making people feel guilty for not breastfeeding. Hey, if they don't want to because of cultural reasons, pain or whatever, it's our job not to guilt them into it. Shouldn't shame them like, oh, you're not going to breastfeed. I hate that. That's totally against patient autonomy. Our job is to encourage it, give the patient the information, tell them the vast benefits of breastfeeding their newborn for at least 6 months. Up to 2 years. But if they don't want to, they don't want to. There's so many benefits here outside of the short-term neonatal benefits we're talking about into later on in life. But if they don't want to, they don't want to. So it's up to the patient. That's number one. But if they want to, they should not be discouraged because of hepatitis C viral load, because it doesn't matter. But it does matter for HIV. Now, before it didn't, because it was no go. Remember, HIV, no breastfeeding, period. But that changed January 2023. That's why we have to combine the two. So I want to be clear, this new publication has zero to do with HIV. But it's a good contrast to the hepatitis C world, because this is causing confusion here, apparently, based on healthcare professionals. Oh, hell, I was going to do this later, but it ties in so nicely to what we're talking about here regarding myths and misperceptions and misunderstandings about hepatitis C and viral load and breastfeeding among healthcare professionals that I don't want to forget, so I want to do it now. In the March 2024 Green Journal, the authors reference a previous publication from January 2019 in the Journal of Pediatric Healthcare. So let's process that for a minute. This is Journal of Pediatric Healthcare. So this has nothing to do. These are not obstetricians. These aren't OBGYNs. They're not women's healthcare nurse practitioners. They're not midwives. They're pediatric providers. They surveyed nurse practitioners, physicians, and physicians' assistants, all outpatient pediatric providers, again, not women's healthcare specialists, and asked them about hepatitis C and breastfeeding. Well, here's the surprising part of this. 28.2%, guys, 28, almost 30%, incorrectly reported that hepatitis C viral infection was an absolute contraindication to breastfeeding. Not a relative, absolute. So do you see how we get mixed messages here? Guys, this is why this is important. That's why we're highlighting this. Now you think, well, that was 2019. That's been some years ago. Yeah, but these confusions still persist, like this March 2024 publication is telling us once again. Okay. But out of the Journal of Pediatric Health, 28.2% incorrectly reported that hepatitis C infection was an absolute contraindication to breastfeeding. It is not. But the whole confusion with viral load is honestly totally understandable. After all, we look for viral loads with HIV, right? Now, traditionally, HIV was considered a contraindication to breastfeeding, as we've already stated. But this has changed. And again, our focus is not on HIV, but it's a nice contrast here. So bear with me because we do need to review this because we're medical education and you got to know that this thing changed. It changed January the 31st. 2023. So just over a year ago, this was based on the U.S. perinatal HIV new clinical guidance released through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and it was updated to change the language discouraging breastfeeding with certain caveats in patients with HIV. What? So this is so, I remember, when was this, guys? Hold on, let me deviate here for a minute. I think it was a couple of months back, maybe 3 or 4 months back, several months back. And I was talking with a medical student, and we do the ceremonial, you know, we're bored, nothing else is going on. So the quick Q&A session, not pimping, because we don't do that. No, I do. Let's call it what it is. But it's not to, like, to intimidate somebody. It's rapid fire so I can make their neurons kick on, okay? I'm sure they see it differently, but it's done with good intention, and they know I'm not trying to, humiliate them or anything. And it's just for learning, okay? When I did it, man, when I was a resident, the old pimping was to humiliate you. I mean, it's just what it was. And you know what? It was mean, but I learned stuff. I'll just call it what it is. I mean, so it's got to be in the middle, right? Humiliation is terrible. Coddling and literally babying somebody like, you know, hey, med students, time to change your diaper now is not the right thing to do. It's got to be in the middle. Anyway, so we were going through breastfeeding, and I said, tell me the contraindications. And they hit the good ones, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. And then they said, oh, HIV. I said, is it though? I said, well, sure, absolutely. Because we learned in Introduction to Clinical Medicine that HIV was a contraindication. Well, that was right as of January 30th, 2023, but it changed January 31st, 2023. And I remember this discussion because they were like, oh my gosh, it's so hard to keep up with stuff. Absolutely. Why we're here? Why we're doing this as open access medical education? Why even the Green Journal is now focusing on a new supplement called ONG that's trying to keep up with the data because it's moving so fast. That's why we're here. And if you notice, even though sometimes we'll do little kind of quirky topics, we always try to focus on something that's fresh out, as you all know. Anyway, this did change January 31st, 2023, and it stated the following, okay? Basically, short of it is, if a patient is on antiretroviral therapy and is undetectable, and the patient really wants to breastfeed, it's fine. Now, it's fine with three words, shared decision making. Okay, shared decision making. And the reason is that if you're undetectable, it's undetectable. Even though it's not real sure what the correlation is with undetectable viral load in the serum and breast milk, it would seem to directly correlate, but we don't have a lot of that data. But what we do have does show that it's pretty darn safe, okay? So yes, right now, can you breastfeed with HIV? If you want to, yes. And you're undetectable, and you're on antiretroviral therapy. Is that wild or what? So it did change. Now, again, our focus isn't HIV, but this is a big deal. And it just happened last year, actually a year and 2 months ago. So I do think there's value in covering it. Let me just briefly read you this text exactly as it reads from the new guidance, okay? Quote, people with HIV should receive evidence-based, patient-centered counseling to support shared decision-making about infant feeding. For women with HIV who are not on ART and who do not have a suppressed viral load at delivery, replacement feeding with formula or banked pasteurized donor human milk is recommended to eliminate the risk of HIV transmission. All right, we get that. That makes sense. And then they go on to say, those with HIV on ART with a consistently suppressed viral load during pregnancy, at a minimum during the third trimester and at time of delivery, should be counseled on the options of formula feeding, banked donor milk, or breastfeeding. In another substantial change, it goes on to say here, the CDC has archived its document on breastfeeding and HIV and chose to instead reference the DHHS perinatal HIV guidelines and the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations as stated here. So there's caveats here, all right? So it's not like, hey, can you breastfeed with HIV? Absolutely. Sure thing. Why not? That's not how it goes. It is with very specific caveats. Number one, first of all, the patient wants to. Second, the patient is on ART. Third, consistently suppressed viral load. Notice that's not one time. It doesn't say episodic. It says consistently suppressed viral load. Remember, that's at the minimum during the third trimester, again, at time of delivery, and then periodic checks, ideally during breastfeeding. So that's the catch here. Can you breastfeed with HIV? Sure thing, if they want to, and it's part of shared decision-making, and those very specific criteria are met. They're on medications, they are suppressed or not detectable, and it's been consistent findings of that, and they agree to have rechecks to make sure that they stay undetectable. So that is the new language, whereas before, it was just no. Hey, I have HIV, can I breastfeed? Nope. Hey, but I really want to breastfeed? Nope. It was just stop. No, we're not discussing it. But now it's part of health equity. And here's the catch. Really think about it, guys. In patients who had HIV and they didn't disclose to anyone, because that's their right? Unless it's their partner, where they're putting their partner at risk. But I'm talking about just family members. As long as they're not putting others at risk with unintentional transmission. The issue was where breastfeeding was highly valued. Then you have a kid because you're HIV and you don't breastfeed. You're like, hey, what's going on? Why aren't you breastfeeding this kid? And it was a stigmatization that was something must be wrong with you. Are you HIV? Do you see that? And that's how this really became an issue. And we're not just talking about abroad. This is mainly in the U.S. And this forced, honestly, patient advocacy groups forced the government and regulatory groups and Infectious Disease Society and American Academy of Pediatrics to take a look at the data one more time and going, guys, isn't it about detection in of the virus in their system? So if they're undetectable persistently and they're on medications, isn't the risk really small? And again, this has now led to this updated guidance from January 31, 2023. That's remarkable. So before it was a hard stop, that's now not the case. If they want to, they understand it's shared decision making. They are consistently undetectable, and they are an ART. Then it is possible, with the caveats that the risk is less than 1%, but it's not zero, and more data is still coming regarding this. No, I didn't forget that we're covering the March 2024 new publication about hepatitis C, not HIV stuff, but it's good info, and you'll thank me later. So, talking about contraindications to breastfeeding, if we go back to the CDC's website on contraindications to breastfeeding, it's a very quick, good review of when breastfeeding is not recommended. Now, CDC says two things. Don't breastfeed, period, and then don't breastfeed temporarily. Okay, so things that are temporary, like cracked nipples, certain medications that you can resume after that episode is done. So I just want to very quickly recap what are considered contraindications to breastfeeding, assuming, of course, that the patient wants to breastfeed. OK, Okay. So first is mothers who should not breastfeed are those who have an infant diagnosed with galactosemia, because that's going to jack them up. So we all forget that. We always think about, oh, there's herpes on the breast. Yes, that's right. Oh, mother's on chemotherapy. Yes, that's correct. But we forget about there's a baby indication too. If the baby can't process this, then it's going to be very dangerous. So galactosemia as an infant issue is a no-go for breastfeeding. Second, if the mother has HIV and is not on antiretroviral therapy and is not suppressed, then it's a contraindication. Related to HIV, but a different family of virus, is if the patient has human T-cell lymphocyte virus type 1 or type 2, so HTLV 1 and 2, that's a no-go for breastfeeding. If the patient is on an illicit opioid, like she's taking PCP, please don't let her breastfeed. But that's different than a patient who is stable on replacement therapy like methadone or buprenorphine. That is still okay for breastfeeding. Okay, so don't get confused. Illicit stuff you buy on the street corner from person X, Y, or Z, that's a no-go. If you get it from a honest MAT program, then that's fine. So methadone or buprenorphine is okay for breastfeeding. And then under the CDC's mothers should not breastfeed is, oh, by the way, if you've got confirmed Ebola virus, yeah, please don't breastfeed. Okay, great. Then there's those that have temporary restrictions for breastfeeding. That's, hey, you can breastfeed as long as this thing is over. That is brucellosis. Okay. If the mother's taking certain medications, mainly chemotherapeutic medications, if the patient has herpes on the breast, that's why it's important to tell our patients, if you get a little sore, don't be picking at it, whether it's on your lip or down in your nether regions, and then touch your boobie. Don't do that, because you're gonna, if you get it that during postpartum, then you can't breastfeed. Or if the mother has monkeypox, then that's no-go. So those are cases where the mother should temporarily not breastfeed and should not express breast milk to give to the child, right? So if you have brucellosis, if you're taking certain medications that are like chemotherapeutic medications, herpes on the breast, or if you've got monkeypox on the breast, then you should not breastfeed or express. But if you have something like TB, or if you have active varicella, chickenpox, that develops 5 days prior to delivery or 2 days following delivery, remember, that's that week window. So varicella, remember, chickenpox, 5 days prior to delivery and 2 days following delivery, you cannot breastfeed, but you can express milk from the breast and then give it to the child. Okay, so for breastfeeding, there's contraindications. That's just don't do it. Then there are temporarily hold and do not express. And then there are do not breastfeed, but you can express milk to the child. And again, those where you should not breastfeed and not feed express milk are brucellosis. If the patient is taking certain medications, if there is herpes on the breast, and there's monkeypox, then that's no go. But you can express with tuberculosis and varicella. Now, for TB, very quickly, CDC states, quote, the mother may resume breastfeeding once she has been treated for 2 weeks and is documented to no longer be contagious, end quote. All right. So not the focus of March 2024, but isn't that important to remind ourselves? So what are the contraindications to breastfeeding? If you're asked that on the oral board, oh, and you want to sound super smarty pants, then answer this way. Well, actually, doctor, there's three different boxes. So I just want to clarify which category, which classification you're asking about, so I can answer correctly. Because there's actually a category where mothers should not breastfeed or express breast milk. Then there's a category where mothers should temporarily not breastfeed and should not feed expressed milk. And then the category where mothers should temporarily not breastfeed but can express milk and give the child the milk that way. So which category are we talking about? The absolute no on all accounts, the temporary no, but you can express, or the temporary no and do not express? Ooh, see, super smarty pants. All right, we just covered the contraindications to breastfeeding from the CDC. And remember, hepatitis C virus, Not on there. Not in any of the three boxes. So there you go with one caveat. This is more theoretical that if there is bloody nipples, so if they are cracked or actively bleeding, then you should likely not breastfeed with hepatitis C. But that's more theoretical because hepatitis C, of course, is bloodborne. And so that gets kind of messy. So in general, hepatitis C virus is totally okay as long as there's no actively bleeding or cut nipples that could, in theory, increase transmission. Wait, speaking about transmission, I think I called it horizontal transmission. Did I do that earlier or was that just in my head? Mother to child is still considered vertical transmission. Most attribute vertical to meaning at time of birth, but breastfeeding, because it's still mother to child, still technically is vertical transmission. So I said horizontal. Sorry, that was a brain fart. It's still considered vertical transmission. Thank you for being part of our podcast family. We really are grateful and thankful that you've chosen to take this journey of medical education with us. You're listening to Clinical Pearls. Oh, man, we still have not really gone into this new March 2024 publication, but it's very easy. Those who had hepatitis C had initiation of breastfeeding that was under the national norms. Basically, it was around 60% when national norms are hovering in the low 80s, around 83%. There's this discrepancy between healthcare providers' understanding about hepatitis C and viral load and breastfeeding. And the thought was that they were being discouraged to breastfeed because of viral load. The question is, well, if why does viral load not matter for hepatitis C, but it does matter for HIV? Remember, we already covered the whole HIV thing. We're done with that. But what the body does, what breast milk does within the person's breast to the hepatitis C virus is amazing. I'm going to explain that in a minute. And there's also a chance that when you identify hepatitis C in pregnancy, you can't just say, oh, well, you got it. I mean, you're just stuck with it. Once you deliver and finish breastfeeding, we're going to start you in DAAs because that's usually what's done. But we have to check viral load again postpartum because you may have a really weird genetic mutation that allows you to be spontaneously cured. Yeah, what? Yes, it's a thing. In some studies, 10%, some up to 25% who carry this specific genetic mutation, they can spontaneously clear their viremia postpartum. Wow. All right, so that is reported. So can hepatitis C ever go away by itself? Well, if you carry a specific mutated allele that helps clear this virus, it seems to do so postpartum in some patients. I'll give you that data in a minute. Is that fantastic or what? So I told you there's two amazing things about the body. One, breast milk actually attacks hepatitis C virus. Amazing. And then second, in some patients with a genetic mutation, yeah, they can self-cure themselves postpartum of hepatitis C.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, pretty darn amazing. But I'll give you that reference in just a minute. I do want to just briefly, guys, I promise I'm not deviating too much. All of this matters, okay? I want to just discuss quickly what the different genotypes are, because it's very simple. And it's not just a, you know, lab discussion and academic discussion. This totally matters for what patients get as antiretroviral therapy. As which DAA med they get, direct acting antiviral, because it's based on their genotype. We're not going to go into all of this. We're not virologists, but you got to be educated on this. So here it is. Next time you have a patient in L&D and you're getting checked out and like, oh, this patient has hepatitis C. Oh, okay. Two things to know, just out of interest. One, what is her viral load? Because it's not going to impact what we do here, but it's just good to know. And then second is what kind of genotype does she have? Again, sounds super smarty pants, because there's six different genotypes, and then some of those have subcategories, all right? So like a 1A, 1B, but in general, there's six different genotypes. Now, there also are some little bit of race ethnic differences, because the majority of types that are found in African-American women, for example, about 90% of African-American women in the U.S., have genotype 1, that's 90%, compared to 67% of Caucasians. So still, no question, genotype 1 is the most common, but their prevalences are a little bit different based on race. So 90% of U.S. African-American women have genotype 1, compared to 67% of Caucasians. So genotypes 1 through 6. And the reason it matters is because, once again, you get to titrate, you get to measure, you get to match, not measure, match the direct acting antiviral to their specific genotype so that it works best, okay? And there's something that we got to remember, that each genotype has different risks. Okay, this is another clinical pearl. They're not all the same. So it's not like you say, you've got regular typical adenovirus and they're all going to behave the same. No, I mean, bacteria don't do that, right? You can have E. coli in the urine, but it can be pan-sensitive E. coli. You can have multi-drug resistant E. coli. So not even bacteria are all uniform. They act different. Same thing with hepatitis C virus, right? So they have different genotypes, and some are more messed up than others. For example, genotype 3, which is the second most common hepatitis C viral subtype in the world. The most common is genotype 1. This is more common like in Northern Europe and parts of Asia, Southeast Asia. But this one is very specific because genotype 3 has a much more rapid progression of liver disease and an increased rate of steatosis. That's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. As another little quinky-dink, as another side note, if you ever see a patient with bad liver function tests and you do a right upper quadrant and it looks very fatty, of course, remember, you're supposed to do a hepatitis panel, full hepatitis panel, even including things like Epstein-Barr and CMV, because weird stuff can affect the liver. But you don't want to miss hepatitis. So not all genotypes are the same. Genotype 3 has more rapid progression of liver disease with an increased rate of steatosis. It also has a higher rate of hepatocellular cancer. All right. So genotype 3 has very, very unique characteristics, and that's why it's harder to treat this one with DAAs. So just remember, the one that you don't want any of them, but you definitely don't want genotype 3. So yes, thankfully, hepatitis C is now almost always curable. That's amazing. And it's not the old interferon-based treatments. These are usually oral medications. Just amazing how far we've come with this thing. But let me just quickly do the whole work about this, all right? So you do a hepatitis C antibody. Oh my gosh, it's positive. Do a viral load. Yes, it's real. You definitely have hepatitis C, a viral load detected. Next step is to find out the genotype. Once you know the genotype, then you can actually run, just like a sensitivity test on the urine and bacteria, you can run to see if the virus has any resistance to any agents, and then you tailor treatment to that, all right? Is that amazing or what? So remember that 6 different genotypes, 3 is the most problematic and the most stubborn, the most linked to morbidity. So first you identify antibody, then viral load, then genotype, and then you can do resistance testing. Okay, we need to start wrapping this up. So I want to focus on 2 very unique properties here of the body that we've already alluded to. One, and this is the explanation of why hepatitis C virus is not an issue with breastfeeding, even though you can isolate hepatitis C RNA from breast milk and colostrum. So yes, it's in the breast, but it's the RNA. It's not the actual enveloped virus. This is pretty darn fascinating. So in September 2013, this is one of the latest publications that has shown this, even though there has been others prior to this, but this is the most kind of comprehensive. This was out of the Journal of Infectious Diseases. This was September 2013. So we've known this for a while. The title is Inactivation of Hepatitis C Virus Infectivity by Human Breast Milk. Now, come on, y'all. That's pretty darn amazing. Okay, so here's what they found. Short of it is that the contents of milk, the composition of milk, helps break up hepatitis C virus and its envelope. Yeah, amazing. The antiviral activity of breast milk, here it is, I'm reading it directly from this publication, is linked to endogenous lipase-dependent generation of free fatty acids. These free fatty acids destroy the lipid viral envelope. Therefore, nursing by hepatitis C virus positive mothers is very unlikely to play a major role in vertical transmission. How about that? So this is only specific. We're talking about hepatitis C virus. This is why HIV is totally different. But this is why viral load for hepatitis C doesn't matter. So just to be clear, hepatitis C is not a contraindication to breastfeeding. Remember, we talked about the contraindications and hepatitis C was not on there. And nowhere in there does it say that you should breastfeed if the viral load is below a certain number. That's not the case. Viral load is important for HIV and breastfeeding, where it has to be documented to have persistent or consistent suppression. But viral load for hepatitis C is not an issue. Again, this was the Journal of Infectious Diseases back in September 2013. The last thing I want to cover is this issue of spontaneous clearance in the postpartum period. Yes, it is a thing. It can happen, but it's not everybody, okay? So some publications have shown this to be around 10% due to this genetic mutation in the immune cell line. Others have stated it can be as high as 25%. The one that was 25% was out of Cairo, and that was published in Clinical Infectious Diseases in 2017. Like 25%, that's amazing. We definitely are not getting into this genetics discussion because it's very, very unique, but you need to know what it is. The spontaneous clearance postpartum seems to correlate with interleukin 28B gene allele mutation. I'm not getting into that. But just know that it's an interleukin 28B genetic mutation that can help clear this thing postpartum. Again, not universal. Don't be telling women, oh, once you deliver, this thing is going to go away. But if they do have this, and you can do this specialized lab check, although most people just check viral load, it's totally fine to just check viral load, again, at time of delivery. And then, you know, following up anywhere from 2 weeks, 4, 6 weeks, along with this discussion of if it doesn't go away, you need to start direct acting antivirals after breastfeeding is complete. As we wrap this up, podcast family, here's the conclusion from the March 2024 publication regarding breastfeeding and hepatitis C. Quote, in conclusion, rates of breastfeeding initiation among those with hepatitis C viral infection in pregnancy were lower than the national average, and median duration was less than 2 months. Viremia during pregnancy was associated with lower rates of breastfeeding initiation. Here it is, guys. Here's the last clinical pearl. Likely reflecting lingering biases and misconceptions about viral load and hepatitis C. There it is. They go on to say, as their last sentence, future research should focus on interventions to improve patient and clinician education on the safety and benefits of breastfeeding in this population, end quote. All right, so quick take-homes. Hepatitis C virus is not a contraindication to breastfeeding with this main caveat. As long as there's no cracked or bleeding nipples, even though that's more theoretical as well. Second, HIV can be breastfed with certain caveats that we've discussed. And number three basically is know the type, the genotype of hepatitis C that the patient has, because that will dictate a future management and long-term prognosis. All right, let's bring it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.